Jesus' cousin, John the Baptizer, kept calling the governor out for his marital immorality. And that irked the governor. People who are in charge never like to be criticized. Herod had John thrown in jail. He was going to try some social distancing to see if that would shut him up. It didn't. It got so bad that Herod wanted to kill John, but the people like John, so Herod can't. Politicians making decisions based on what polls say is not a new phenomenon. Herod made a rash promise to his alluring teenager stepdaughter at a big shindig, and at her mother's behest, she requested the head of John the Baptist on a platter. So godfather-esque. And in an effort not to look weak in front of all of his guests, Herod had John beheaded. Politicians willing to let people die in order to maintain status is not a new thing either. John was a really good guy. Jesus says, there has never been a person born of woman who was better, ever. And John got his head separated from his body because of an evil, cowardly king. Good people dying, innocent people dying because of corrupt politicians. And the Bible adds, there is nothing new under the sun. One of the best books, one of the most satisfying books I have ever read on the question of where is God when things aren't going well, is called The Prisoner in the Third Cell by Gene Edwards, about John the Baptist. I would encourage you to read it. But when Jesus heard all of that had happened, it was like a punch to his gut, not only because John was Jesus's cousin, but because John was like Jesus's co-worker, and Jesus knew what happened to John was soon going to happen to him. So Jesus grabbed his guys, jumped in a boat, and they took off to regroup. But the crowds of people who thought Jesus was great decided to follow the boat. The lake they were on is only 8 miles wide. They could see where the boat was headed, and they all ran along the shore to where they were going to be when Jesus got out again. Even though Jesus' intention was to get away, Jesus let them all catch up with him, and he started healing them. Jesus was sickened by the politicians' decisions in his life, but he did not stop doing good. And this is where, do you remember, this is where Jesus took care of people all day long and it was late in the evening and nobody had had anything to eat all day long. And Jesus said, hey, how about let's feed them? And his guy said, how? It would cost a year's salary to give everybody a granola bar. There were people in need, but Jesus's guys didn't think they had enough to meet that need. And the disciples said, how would we do that? All we have is 5 Panera baguettes and 2 sardines. How are we going to feed 5,000 people? And Jesus said, you tell me. I think Jesus is hoping here that one of his guys would remember the wedding. Do you remember the wedding where they ran out of wine and Jesus made something from nothing? I think Jesus is giving his guys a chance to put 5 plus 2 together and get the best fish fry ever. But they can't. They don't. They don't remember. They can't figure it out. They don't ask Jesus for help. So he says, fine, have everyone sit down and tell them dinner will be served shortly. And he thanks God for providing, and he starts dishing stuff out, and when it was all done, they were all good. Everyone there that day rubbed their bellies and said, wow, that was a great meal. And they had 12 baskets extra, one parting gift for each of Jesus's 12 trainees to carry away, a little souvenir of the day he fed 5,000 people, reminding them as they munched on the leftover bread that little is much when Jesus is in it. And that went so well that the crowd decided they were going to elect Jesus as the new governor. And as they were putting together an exploratory task force, Jesus told his guys, you better get in the boat and take off. And in Matthew 14, verse 22, it says, immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. After Jesus dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Please note, these guys are a long way out in the middle of the sea, in the middle of a storm, and it's right where Jesus sent them. Sometimes people think that deciding to follow Jesus will make their lives easier. I know people, you know people, who get so frustrated when life is still frustrating after they've decided to follow Jesus. One lady, after hanging out with the church, after listening to the teaching about Jesus, learning, being baptized, trying it for a while, one lady just walked away. She tore up her membership card and she left it all behind. When asked why she walked away from the church, she said, well, I've really tried, but my husband's still a jerk, and my daughter still won't talk to me, and my finances are still a mess. I'm not happy, and if Jesus can't fix that, who needs him? I don't know, maybe the 12 felt like that night. Jesus had sent them across the lake, and they were having a terrible time going where Jesus told them to go. My mom and dad once took a boat ride on that lake. They said it started out as a nice afternoon ride, but quickly turned nasty to the point where Dad was watching the captain and he was white-knuckling the wheel because the boat with an engine was having trouble making headway against the wind. The Sea of Galilee is about four times as big as Canandaigua Lake. It's shaped like a wind tunnel between mountains on each side, so storms can come up fast. These guys have been out there rowing all night, not getting anywhere, and it's their lake. They are fishermen. They make their living off this lake. They know how to deal with weather, but they are still miles from shore after trying for a long time to get in. They are having a terrible time, maybe the worst ever, and Jesus had sent them out there. Maybe it kind of seemed like it was his fault, so I'll say it again. Sometimes you can be right where Jesus wants you to be, and it won't be good. But that's not the end of the story. Verse 25 in Matthew 14 says, shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. It's a ghost, they said, and they cried out in fear. Sometimes people who do not like the idea of miraculous say the disciples saw that they saw Jesus walking along the shore nearby, or that the boat wasn't really that far out and Jesus was just out walking in shallow water to meet them. But neither of those two explanations help us understand why his guys would have been terrified when they saw him. You don't have to think Jesus did the impossible here if you don't want to, but that is what it says happened that night. He did the impossible. Jesus walked out to them in the middle of the lake, which is over 100 feet deep in most spots. I don't know how he did it. But I don't know how Jesus fed 5,000 people with a sack lunch either. I don't know how Jesus walked on water, like I don't know how he turned water into wine. I don't know how he got through the storm, but Matthew says he did, and Matthew was on the boat, and it freaked them out. They've already had a terrible night, a very hard, very miserable night, and they see a guy walking their way, and they scream, "It's a ghost!" Not like Casper, more like Pirates of the Caribbean. Can you imagine if you're kayaking in Canandaigua at night and there's a storm comes up and there are waves and you're thinking you're going to die, and then you see a guy walking towards you, coming your way? I would start rowing really hard in the opposite direction or jump in and swim the other way. Verse 27 says, but Jesus immediately said to them, take courage, it is I, don't be afraid. What he really said was, buck up, buttercups, courage, I, it is. And through pouring rain and howling wind, they said, what? Why are you talking Yoda to us? I, it is. And Jesus kind of was talking Yoda here, because what he said was ego eimi, which translates, I am that I am. Do you remember when God appeared to Moses in the burning bush back in Exodus 3? And Moses said, God, I can't go do stuff for you. I don't even know your name. And God said, my name is I am that I am. What God said in the burning bush is exactly what Jesus says here. I, it is. But the big point of the evening was that Jesus is always willing to join us in the middle of our storms. Jesus would later promise to always be with us wherever we go, whatever we go through. The lady who said her husband's still a jerk and her daughter's still not talking to her and her finances are still out of control, Jesus didn't promise she would not get there, but that he would be there with her. Jesus promises that he will always be with you wherever you go if you want him to be. But wait, there's more. In verse 28, Peter replied, they see the ghost. And in verse 28, Peter replies, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you on the water. Sometimes we say the craziest things to God. In a moment of being overwhelmed, maybe when we're really in trouble, maybe when we're really happy. Sometimes in moments of passion, your soul just kind of bursts loose and says something crazy to God. Peter thought, oh my goodness, Jesus, that's Jesus. He's out there walking on the lake. Of course he is. Of course he can. He's Jesus. He does stuff like this. He's walking on the water. He does stuff like this all the time. He's so great. He could probably let me do it too because he's Jesus. And before Peter even knows what he's saying, he says, if you told me to come out there with you, Jesus, I would. I cannot wait to see the tape someday of what happened here. I mean, at that point, Jesus had to smile, right? I mean, he's probably smiling already as he's taking a stroll atop the Sea of Galilee. But then Peter says, invite me to come along, Jesus, and I'll do it. And Jesus smiles and says, nice. In verse 29, Jesus says, come. Then Peter got down out of the boat and walked on water and came towards Jesus. And remember, Matthew, who's writing this, was there. He was watching with his own eyes. This is no David Blaine trick. There are no fancy camera work here. Peter was walking on the water towards Jesus. He really didn't. He did it. The lake was not frozen. Peter was not stepping carefully on submerged stones. He was walking on top of water that fills the Sea of Galilee. He really did for a little while. Verse 30 says, but when Peter saw the wind, he was afraid, and he beginning to sink, he cried out, Lord, save me. Did you hear about the lady who bought a sweater, but it was picking up a lot of static electricity? So she returned it to the store and they gave her another one free of charge. Peter started out well. He was actually doing it because he was picking up on Jesus' power. But then the ocean spray started to hit him in the face and the wind whipped his coat and he looked down and it occurred to him how impossible what he was doing was, and he started to sink. And once again, Peter thought he might die. And all he had left was a prayer, but that was enough. Peter cried out to Jesus. He said, Lord, save me. He was in trouble, big trouble, but he knew where to go. Verse 31 says, immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. You have such little confidence, Jesus said. Why did you doubt? And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshiped him, saying, truly, you are the Son of God. And here's what I think we can learn from this night in Peter's life. Number one, if in the middle of a storm, you show confidence in Jesus, some other people probably won't see it. Now, it doesn't say this, but don't you think that the other 11 guys in the boat tried to stop Peter? Did they not all grab at his shoulder as he jumped over the side of the boat saying, what are you doing? No way, Peter, you're crazy, you're whack, you can't do that. Or maybe they didn't. Maybe they thought Peter was just trying to show him up. Maybe they said, stop, don't come back. Did you hear about the swaggering cowboy who wandered into a crowded blacksmith shop one day and he picked a horseshoe up off the ground not knowing it was red hot and he dropped it immediately, but he didn't rub his hand because he was too proud to admit that he got burned? And somebody said, what's wrong, Zeke? Too hot to handle? And the cowboy said, nope, just doesn't take me very long to look at a horseshoe. Were there others there that night who were just a little irritated that Peter was jumping out there first? Did they always hold that against him from then on? That Peter's the one who jumped out there? You know his birth name was Simon, right? Jesus gave him the nickname Peter. And did they rub that in from then on? Because Peter means rock, as in he sank like a Peter. Ha ha ha. Maybe that's what they said from then on. Or how about this one? Maybe the 12 saw Jesus walking on the water and only Peter volunteered to join him. Only Peter hopped over. Peter alone went walking towards Jesus and he sank later, that's true, but in the Guinness Book of World Records under the category of walking on water, there are only two names listed ever and Peter has one of them. If Jesus is the one you trust, other people won't get you. But you can get to places in your life you can't believe. Matthew 17 is where Jesus said, if you have confidence in me the size of a tiny seed, you will see mountains move. Lesson number one, hang on to Jesus no matter what other people do. Lesson number two, if you show confidence in Jesus in the middle of a storm, you will see amazing things happen. Here's what I don't get. I've never understood this. When Peter started to sink and Jesus pulled him up out of the water, against what was Jesus' foot pushing for leverage? Right? To lift somebody up who's fallen down, you have to push down hard against the ground, against something solid, right? But they were in water. Jesus was standing on top of water. What did he push against? nothing, something. I don't know. I can't explain it. I don't think they could see anything. But even though they could not see how he did it, they all saw Jesus do that. They saw him push against nothing, and it somehow worked. Some of you have made me aware of some of the situations in your life right now. I know there are storms raging for a whole bunch of you right now. Some of you are in marriages where you're doing everything you possibly can, but the person you sleep next to every night doesn't even know how it's supposed to go. Some of you have children who are far from God right now, and it breaks your heart as you watch them flounder in life looking for they know not what. Some of us have parents who are doing the best they can, but mostly they can't. Some of you have said you are so lonely, it's almost a physical ache. Some of you have physical aches so bad there are times you just can't anything. Some of you carry guilt around for things you've done in your past that still haunt you. Some of you are trying to deal with financial pressures that feel crushing. And on top of all of that, let's throw a pandemic that kills and a country that's divided down the middle. How in the world can anyone be expected to get through all of that? How could all of that not force us under and drown us below? What could we possibly push against for leverage when it doesn't look like there's anything there? But what Peter discovered that night is that Jesus can do things and you can't even figure out how it happens sometimes. Daniel Ole Asa was an African warrior young man. He was part of the warrior set. The warrior set is a bunch of guys all about the same age. They hang out together. They cause trouble together. They hunt dangerous animals for the village. They're basically a gang. But Daniel Ole Asa heard about Jesus, and he decided to become a follower of Jesus's, and he dropped out of the warrior set. The group didn't like that. They tried to pressure him to return, but Daniel would not. He was a Christian. Daniel was married. In that culture, when a man your age visits your home for the evening, you offer him your wife. It is the polite thing to do. But when his gang friends came to visit, Daniel did not follow that custom anymore, because now he follows Jesus, and Jesus taught Daniel it's one man and one woman for life. His friends did not like that, so one day they stole Daniel's wife and daughter and all his cows and his goats. If he would not share her, Oloma, the leader of the group, said, "We will just take her." And the warrior set went, kidnapped them, and went up and hid in the hills. Daniel Ole Asa tried to follow them to plead the return of his family and his possessions, but he couldn't even find them. So Daniel went back to the village, and he found Rob Denning, a missionary who was working with their village. And together, Daniel and Rob prayed, and they prayed, and they prayed. The next day, Daniel Ole Asa's cows wandered back into the village. And to this day, Rob does not know how the cows escaped or how they found their way home, but all of his cows came back. So Daniel and Rob prayed some more, and then they went searching in the hills for the warrior set, and this time they found them. And Daniel challenged Oloma, the leader, face to face. He said, "I am a Christian, and this is wrong for you to take my wife and my cows. You know it's wrong. God is watching you, and he returned my cows yesterday. Now you must give me back my wife." Oloma, the leader, just laughed. But Daniel insisted, "No, you must give me her back." Then Oloma got mad and started yelling. And Daniel insisted, "No, you must give me her back." And Oloma threatened him, and Daniel insisted, "No, you must give me her back." At this point, Rob thought that there would be bloodshed. But right then, Oloma turned and walked away. And when he came back, he brought Daniel's wife and daughter and goats. And my question is, against what was Daniel pushing that day? Rob says he still doesn't know how to explain all that. Right when he thought Oloma would kill Daniel, instead he surrendered. And Daniel Ole Asa returned to his village with his family and his flock. There was no way that could have turned out right. There was no way that that could work. There was nothing to push against. There was no way the Christian man could win. But he did. Ephesians 3:20 is where Jesus says that he can do immeasurably more than all we can ask or even imagine. Lesson number two from Peter walking that night. If you trust Jesus, you will experience things you cannot even think up. Lesson number three. I think what we learn most here is that us showing confidence in Jesus in the middle of storms will cause other people to recognize Jesus for who he really is. Here you go, folks. This is it. After Peter did his thing that night, when they got back in the boat, they all said, "Whoa." They didn't say, "Whoa, Peter." Everyone in the boat said, "Whoa, Jesus. You are OMG for real." And if we will trust Jesus when stuff is really falling apart all around us, the people watching us, our family, our friends, our neighbors, our coworkers, our kids, if we will trust Jesus, they will have their best chance to see him in all of his greatness. And there is nothing worth more than helping other people see him like that. Whatever it costs us in life. If you will step forward boldly in whatever direction Jesus is asking you to go right now, if your family will walk forward together with Jesus into whatever comes next, if Willowbrook will dare to do things that we have never even tried yet because Jesus wants us to, if we will take chances that we have not yet, if we will take really big swings at really good things, even though it looks like we're in the middle of a raging storm right now, people will see all of that in you, in your family, in us, and it will help them see Jesus. Did you hear about the guy in the Old West who sold his saloon to a church? So the congregation came in, they replaced the bars and the tables with pews, and they installed new lighting, and they painted everything, and they made it look beautiful. But in all their updating, they never noticed that the owner had left his parrot there. So the bird was perched in the rafters for their first Sunday assembly. And when the preacher walked in, the parrot screeched, "Ah, new bartender. And when the choir walked in, the parrot said, "Ah, new dancing girls." But when the parrot looked out at the congregation, it squawked, "Same old crowd." What Jesus wants to do is to transform us into something new, different, better, so that we're not the same old crowd. We might go through the same kinds of storms as other people, but we do it differently. We do it expecting that he can make stuff happen that we can't even imagine. Let me tell you the rest of the story. Daniel Ole Asa's courage stuck in Oloma's mind. And months later, the leader of the gang, Oloma, came and asked Daniel to tell him about this God. And Oloma, the lead warrior, the meanest, strongest, most powerful guy in that whole area, was baptized into Christ, and he now lives in a hut right across a garden from Daniel Ole Asa. And they often sit next to each other and sing songs to their God and to ours. Because, folks, Jesus walks on water, and he invites us to join him in the doing. So the question for you, the question today for your family and for our whole church is whether or not, in this weather, will you dare to step out of the boat?